Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 75. Discovery, season 2, episode 2. New Eden.
Do you have a ship? Do you, fly among the stars?
Yeah.
And Earth?
Well, we're part of a galactic federation now, dedicated to peace, exploration, and protecting places such as your planet. Jacob, we cannot intervene. Your society has to evolve in its own way.
My entire family spent their whole lives hoping to get a confirmation that what we believed was true. And you gave me that answer. Something none of them ever got. And that is enough for me. Thank you. Because of you, we're not lost anymore.
What are we doing?
Oh, we're doing a podcast right now.
A podcast.
A podcast.
Well, I never heard of such a thing.
Well, now, well, you're participating in one.
I never heard of such a thing as a podcast.
You're currently involved in a podcast.
I know about the radio and the TV, but a podcast? Golly, what is that?
Alrighty, folks, welcome. Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
It got a little unhinged at the end there. So
yeah.
Pod people.
So
pod people.
We're pod people.
Pod people.
Don't worry, Dan knows full well what a podcast is.
Don't worry.
I'm just
everyone's like, oh my
I'm
god.
I just want people to calm the fuck
everyone's,
down.
Everyone's not losing his mind.
Everyone's got their hands up to their head and their hair going, oh, yeah, is he know what a podcast is?
Calm it, yeah.
This
calm
is really
down.
Awkward that Dan is being weird.
It's just, it's okay. Everything's going to be just fine. You're with us. We're going to take care of you. All of us in our own way.
Seven red bursts spread across 3,000 light years.
Yeah, so we are talking about the Star Trek Discovery episode. You've thrown me off there, Dan. Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 2, New Eden.
That was my segue.
Directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Yes, Jonathan Frakes. Johnny Frakes. Good old number one.
Johnny
Commander
Frakes.
William D.
Johnny
Riker. Frakes. William Riker, originally out of Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
Dad's an asshole, by all accounts.
Alaska.
Jonathan Frakes got his start.
People still live in Alaska.
I don't know about Jonathan Frakes' dad. I'm just talking about Riker's dad.
Oh, Jonathan Frakes used to dress up as Captain America and take money from people or something?
Yes.
That's what Captain America does. In-
that's like the real Captain America.
Yeah.
Steve Rogers.
Steve. Yeah.
So the
New Eden.
So the opening was like, yeah, New Eden. The opening was when it was doing the last time on Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Tilly took some asteroid of dark matter for some reason. Colbert died in the mycelial
network.
He
died in the previous season.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. They were just, this was just on the, okay. Yeah. This was like, they were saying previously.
I think they grabbed that asteroid in the previous episode.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
But the Colbert died, yeah, in the previous... Yeah, I don't remember a lot of what happened in the first two seasons of Discovery.
Well, season two of
I remember,
Discovery...
You gotta check that out.
I remember season one, just a lot of insanity with, like, yeah. Klingons and humans that we've talked about is because of weirdness behind the scenes. But season two, I'm like... There's a lot I don't recall about that season. I don't know.
I enjoy season two, but there were some behind-the-scenes issues, and the... I think the ultimate plot line suffers from what a lot of time travel plot lines. It's a little in depth and intricate. It's a little hard to keep together, even if you're a super Star Trek nerd. You can totally, you can work it out if you go through and watch the season or check it out on Memory Alpha. But
so both seasons had behind the scenes issues?
Yes.
Season three was the first one where they didn't.
Season three was the first thing where by all external accounts that I'm aware of, everything was relatively smooth.
Someone might have sat on someone's bagel once or something, but no kind of craziness, people getting directors getting fired or
it's showrunners leaving, showrunners getting fired, switching up plots in the middle, you know, starting one plot and not knowing exactly where it goes, you know, suddenly having to add like an extra episode or, you know.
So you just like change the plot entirely. It's
rare that you'll find a Star Trek series thus far that hasn't had similar growing pains.
It's rare.
Yes, it is. It is indeed rare. That being said, though, I do really enjoy Discovery's second season. You know, again, the overarching plot, but there's a lot of great stuff within that plot that I think is that works very well.
There's neat stuff that happens, that's for sure.
So the premise is basically Spock leaves an audio file saying he has nightmares that keep telling him to go somewhere, and he drew these two signals, or these signals 2 months before they appeared to, what, Starfleet or something? Like
everyone saw them.
Everyone saw, but he somehow dreamed them up 2 months beforehand, and then we know that he's in the psych unit on Starbase 5. He put himself there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right, they follow these signals around for some reason that were put there for some reason. We don't know why. Did we find out why? Found out about the whole Angel deal, but did we find out why? Later on, we do find out why.
Basically, the point is to essentially to attract Discovery to these places where it needs to be in order to solve whatever the particular issue happens to be. But then that gets complicated by other things that go on. So, yeah.
It's a pretty weird season.
The cool thing about this episode, about New Eden, though, and I think one of the reasons why, for many people, it is considered one of the best episodes of Discovery, and for many more people than that, it is considered one of the most old school Trek stories. It's somewhat self-contained, even though it's a chunk of the larger story, but you've basically got A plot, B plot. You know, I guess the A plot would be Pike and Burnham and Owashukan on the planet doing their business. Mm-hmm. And then the B plot being Tilly, apparently hallucinating, you know, this character.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember that whole storyline. It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Does that continue?
Yes.
Okay,
That turns into a whole thing.
That girl's in the Expanse.
She is in the Expanse.
She plays a builder.
Tilly, right. Yeah, the B-plot, Tilly's got the, I can't remember why they took that asteroid in to begin with, but it's got some dark matter, but not like all dark matter.
Because they couldn't beam it on. They couldn't beam a bit of it on. It wouldn't beam up.
So, yeah, Tilly helped rig together.
But why did they want it to begin with?
They ended up rescuing Jen Reno.
Yeah, that's right.
That was in the previous episode.
And they grabbed it because it was interesting, right?
Yeah, and she grabbed it, but then it wouldn't beam up, and she was like, "Oh fuck!" And then they figured out a way for them to like grab a smaller asteroid, and
so Jet Reno wanted it.
Yeah,
I think
it was
some fascinating shit.
It was something they had to
dark
get.
Dark matter asteroid or something.
Yeah,
and once it wouldn't beam up, they were like, "Whoa, we got it! We really got to get some of this stuff now because it must be something funky."
And so it's kind of crazy. It was she was saying that a cubic centimeter of this Metrion charged asteroid weighs 1.5 metric tons, and that even goes into the plot of what of using gravity to pull those things along.
Yeah.
But when they were near it on the
planet, lay that groundwork.
When they were near it on the planet, I don't remember were they close to this thing on the asteroid? Because like
I can't really remember.
Because like if it was that fucking dense, it would have sucked them in.
So I think this goes to, because my question to you guys is what do you think it is? Do you agree with the idea, the perception that this is kind of an old school Trek story? And if you do, what are the components that you think make it? And I'll say for one that we're here confused. Even though we are ridiculous diehard nerds about Star Trek, we're nevertheless confused about exactly what the order of events and everything and what the context was, because it's a confusing story. But in this case, it doesn't matter. If this was a TNG episode or something, you would just be like, well, who the fuck knows? Why, there's a radiation belt and they have this, we were taking this piece of dark matter to study. And they would just yeah, state it in the exposition,
right.
You know?
Right.
So yeah. The connecting points to the greater story are almost irrelevant in terms of telling this somewhat brief character tale about what happens when you encounter humans that... are like, they don't know what the deal is back on Earth.
And I don't know if this was done on, this probably wasn't done on purpose, but it did have that, like the set piece, however that word's defined, of just the town with this like old school looking church and like people wandering around, yeah, like
rundown New England or something.
Yeah, do you know where this was filmed?
And people look like they were in the past, but also partly in the future. So like a lot of the original, like a lot of the TNG episodes, you know, they'd have these people on these planets that were, you know, primitive compared to the Starfleet, but they still had this alien future look to them. So that's kind of like the look of that planet with the church and stuff.
You're going to want to know where this was filmed.
Kind of like reminds me of Toronto.
No, this was filmed in the Balls Falls Conservation Area, historic village in Ontario, Canada.
Balls Falls.
The Balls Falls Conservation Area Historic Village.
That's even crazier than Balls Crossing, which we have near Ballston Mall.
We have Ballston and we have Balls Crossing. Ballston we have Mall. Balls Ford. But we don't have Balls Falls.
No, we don't.
So I think this is an improvement. I know we have a huge contingent.
We've got Hell's Bells, though.
Well, we've got huge contingent of listeners in Canada. And so any of y'all...
I got to watch what I say.
...out there in Ontario who are near Balls Falls... Conservation Area Historic Village, please go out there and take a picture and send it to us.
It'll last longer. Take a picture.
Yeah, and
I've heard that.
It would also engender some interaction between hosts and audience. That's the other thing I was thinking. It will last longer and sort of, you know, so, can convey that we interact with our audience.
So the point of me saying all that stuff about the church and the village is that it kind of had a vibe of like, you know, Star Trek, you know, we're on this village planet, you know, and I mean how varied can it be? But by Star Trek there's always a certain kind of look to it. I don't know.
Well, this was not the only time we've seen a similar story in Star Trek, because in TOS there's an episode called, I think it, what is it? Paradise Syndrome. Paradise Syndrome is a similar one where like humans, like for some reason, by some force, are brought to some alien planet and then they don't know what's going on back at Earth and they're all primitive-y or whatever. You also had in Voyager, there was the 37s. Which I remember that episode. That was a pretty good episode. But that's another deal where, you know, there's people taken out of time. I don't want to spoil it, but there's some people taken out of time and, you know, you encounter them.
People.
What about the
taken out
the
of time,
TNG?
You encounter them. And then you go, whoop-dop-a-whoop-dop-a-whoop-whoop-whoop. It's time to watch some Star Trek.
Is that a new slogan or a theme song?
It's just something. It's a little thing I made. You got to leave your mark on this world. We have a limited amount of time, so you got to leave things behind that make people remember who you were.
Boop, Star Trek.
They call Dan the Derailinator.
Okay, sorry. What were you saying, trademark. Jesse? You were saying something.
TNG.
There was a TNG episode with those Irish people.
Yeah, although...
That wasn't like the same kind of time displacement.
Yeah, there was no time displacement, but I think that vibes. The other
but
one...
it was like an earlier contingent of human colonists.
It's a similar thing. Yeah. And also... trying to talk to them and convince them to do whatever the Federation
like,
tells them
lower,
to do.
They're a lower tech level.
But there was there's an Enterprise episode called North Star. And that's another similar story where humans are sort of taken by some people and they're like put on this planet. But yeah, I think maybe the fact that they've done similar stories before is another thing that contributes to the vibe that this is... more old schooly Star Trek.
Where did they get the electricity to like keep that beacon running for so many years?
It was a battery, I think.
That was what the beacon was running off of, was a battery?
It seemed like it.
Well, that was a
it
pretty...
It didn't seem like
it was probably fusion or something.
Well, I mean, it was technology from 2053, so by...
Yeah, they probably had fusion.
By two, do you think we'll get fusion by 2050?
I don't think we will, but I think they did.
Okay, fair enough.
Maybe the Red Angel was the one who left that too.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the idea. In fact, it might have been stated outright later in the.
I don't know. It seems like they could use it for other things, but maybe there just wasn't that much of it.
Apparently, maybe it doesn't put out enough. Put out enough juice.
Doesn't put out enough
because they were all
1.21 gigawatts.
They're all about getting the lights back on in the church.
Yeah,
which I guess you could say. You know, to discuss some of the thematic elements of this episode.
Like how they could fit a few hundred people in that church, which seems like a lot of people, and then they created a planet out of it. So you know there was like a whole lot of incest going on as well.
You know, I don't actually technically...
That was a thematic element of this episode.
I just from an anthropological perspective, I think 200 is well above the problematic limit for in-group breeding.
But someone's a cousin of someone.
But it's well beyond the genetic.
There's no way to get around that.
Problems.
But it's still kind of like...
That would ring the same as like, you know, early groups of humans.
There is evidence...
We used to have more arms.
There is evidence that suggests that at one point in time, the human... they call it the bottleneck. And it's when the human population dropped to possibly as low as 1,000 remaining individuals on the planet.
Wow.
And that all future people, you, me,
and you,
everyone listening, comes from those you know, 1,000 to 10,000 people who
were.
When
was that?
Long ago. I can't remember the exact date.
Way back.
And it would be a problem if I get it wrong. So look it up.
Okay. But I can kind of guess.
But the point being,
it's why we look all weird and crazy, because we used to be really beautiful hairy creatures.
And now we're really ugly hairy creatures.
Well, like we're less hair than we used to have, but we used to have all this majestic hair on our face, everyone. And it was they were beautiful.
Like a lion.
Yeah.
We were lying.
But it's people. Like a mane on their face.
Yeah.
And it's humanity back then, and they were beautiful, and it felt good to the touch. It didn't feel like pube hair. It felt like fur, except it was long like a mane. It was like a mane on your face. A face mane.
There's a lot of inadvertent self-discovery going on.
We are watching Discovery.
That's a fair point. A fair point well made.
Thanks for bringing us back to the...
Pike's dad, we learned, taught science, but in his spare time taught comparative religion, which is kind of interesting. I like that idea. I think that's fun. I like the idea of teaching science and religion and treating them as this sort of like weird dance, these two things that dance with each other.
I like the idea of... You got me saying that. I like the idea.
I
like the idea. I don't
like the thing, but that's I like the idea of the thing.
Yeah, put it over put it over here.
Don't put it next to me, though, because I don't like that thing. I just like the idea of it.
In my fantasy life, if it became real, it would get awkward real quick.
Whoa, wait a minute.
Pike. Positioning Pike is somebody who is...
That sounds like the name of a TV show, Positioning Pike.
Sounds like the name of a pornography film enjoy watching.
You could make a sitcom. They don't have any porno sitcoms. So
it could be a VR modeling program where you just get your own... VR version of Captain Pike.
So no story then.
Yeah.
You just pose them however
you make
you
your
just
own story.
Yeah.
You make your own.
Get out of here.
It's like playing with dolls.
Yeah.
You dance them around. You wiggle them around, and you're hey you, and the other thing, and they fight.
I haven't played with a Ninja Turtle or a G.I. Joe in so many years. So
more your loss, sir.
Really, dude.
More your loss. You should be pulling those things out and playing with it.
You got to get out there and get some.
My advice to everyone out there is:
we can have some wars.
Whenever appropriate, pull it out and play with it.
Go down to the creek, build a fort.
Pull it out and play with it.
Just pull it out.
Pull it out of your pocket. Pull it out of your bag of toys.
Ninja Turtles
backpack.
And G.I. Joe's got expensive though. Just like Lego did.
You should just keep... You just have the ones you used to have.
Well, yeah, but
Playmobil
they're gone.
Super,
they're thrown away.
Well, go find them.
Go find them. I'll go find you.
You could write a blog about it. You could do a YouTube video series about, like, finding my old toys.
And I'll just never find any of them. There'll be no payoff ever. There'll never be a payoff to
this
show.
It would just be one episode of you going to the dump, and they'll be like, oh, no, man. No, you're not going to find... Those are gone.
Yeah.
Well, we
shipped those to China.
Oh, back to China.
I don't know.
They ship our landfills out to China.
I don't know. It's probably some
they do,
some,
yeah.
So oh, really?
It could be some shit I made.
Well, they don't do it anymore because China, like...
China was like...
They upped their standards.
Yeah.
Well, you know how there's...
Now we can't send it anywhere.
Well, you know how there's like in the ocean, there's the garbage island where it's all the garbage they talk about stuck together, made an island. Maybe there's an action figure island where it's a whole action.
I don't know if there's actually an island.
It's not an island. It's
but there's just trash.
It's a high density of floating trash.
Okay. Yes. I know. But it's like
I'm just clarifying for our listeners. It's not that Dan knows. No. We know Dan knows.
You're being a little pedantic.
I am 100% being pedantic, and I will admit that.
If he admits it, he's fine, though.
But I'm just saying, just to keep things on the level.
So we're not lying to you, the listener,
who
we love so fucking much.
I'm just saying the audience, we've set a certain level of expectation, and we just want to make sure that everyone's got their cards on the table. We're just joshing around with some exaggerations. So we'll point out the exaggerations when appropriate. The exaggerations are for rhetorical purposes and entertainment purposes. We trust that you understand that, but just in case you don't, I thought I'd make the comment.
So thank you for making the comment and setting me straight. I didn't appreciate it at first, but now I'm just so happy.
You look it.
So I was just saying there could be an action figure island where instead of being...
For a moment. I thought you were going to go back to talking about Discovery. I really thought that was going to happen.
Where all the ground is just made of all the action figures you can think of just twirled together. So you just
undulating.
Undulating. And it's not an island. It's just a moving mass of stuff. But you could stand on it.
Right. Well, you could make that happen.
Some parts would just be a bunch of Jabba the Hutts.
Yeah, that could be the foundation.
When the arm falls off.
It's Jabba the Hutts all the way down.
Jabba the Hutt, like that one arm that would just fall off.
And, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I remember he was all movie about you can move him.
Well, this is a long list of reasons why this episode feels old school.
Yeah.
But the Pike the point I still don't believe I've been able to make, which is that they've positioned Pike.
This is where it went wrong.
Yeah, this is where it went wrong. They've positioned Pike to having a cultural and life experience interacting with people of faith, people of a religion. And while you get the impression that he himself does not, you know, hold religious views, he understands a couple things, but one of those things being that he, in order to interact with these people, in order to complete the mission, he has to communicate with them in a way that makes sense, the way that would be appreciated. And it's funny because Burnham is the xenoanthropologist, but it's Pike who's doing more of the whole, we want to approach you on your terms.
Yeah, she was...
We're in your house.
She was doing more of the, like, forget this religion mumbo-jumbo. Tell me tell me about your science here and how you scientifically saw it.
She was like, what if your religion was science? And I was like, Michael Burnham, science is not a religion.
Yeah, right. It doesn't. And Pike at one point, when she says that their faith is a lie, or when he says, like, they're living a lie, and Pike says, can you prove that their faith is a lie? Isn't there something about how you shouldn't try to make people prove a negative?
There's two axioms.
How that one goes.
There's two axioms, and people often forget the second one because they're parallel axioms. One axiom is that you can't prove a negative. And so often people say, well, you can't tell me there's no, you know, Jesus or devil or whatever because you can't prove there's not. So that's one axiom. But the other axiom is positive claims require positive evidence. So in other words, in order to make a claim for something, you have to have some evidence for it. So those axioms go together. The second one is often forgotten. But in the case of this, it's the problem that Burnham has, and I don't think this is, I'm sure some people will criticize this and be like, she's so stupid. No, she's growing as a character. Yeah. This whole fucking time through the first season, she's growing and learning. She's learning from Pike here that her obsession with science, that's fine for her, that to be her obsession. I agree with her. I would be totally in line with her. But you're visiting these people. It's forget about the being undercover and all that. Just out of sheer like humanity, it's okay to be like, I'm going to have a conversation with you on your terms without, you know, kind of throwing a little hissy fit and asking questions that my captain clearly is getting uncomfortable that I'm asking.
Yeah, it's because she grew up on Vulcan. That's why she can't make a joke. Vulcans don't do jokes.
That was a good joke.
And that was a good joke.
And it was a very Spock-like joke.
Yeah, and Spock was always cracking jokes at the end of episodes, you know, in the original. That's the one thing we miss about, like, modern
past TOS Spock and TAS Spock is he didn't crack as many jokes.
Yeah, well, he still cracks some. His, I got that good joke in, well, in Star Trek 6.
Star Trek 4.
Well, yeah, there's some good ones in Star Trek 4.
Yeah,
in Star Trek 6,
there's a couple in the movie. I wasn't thinking about the movies. You're right, though.
He tells a joke, that's not, but it's not as funny. Mm. But it's meant to not be funny. Anyway, go listen to our Star Trek 6 episode. It's one of our most popular episodes, so if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it now.
So Pike was, like, turning the beacon off at one point. Wouldn't he be violating the General Order 1, which is the Prime Directive or whatever? You know,
Prime Directive means this and that and a couple other things.
Well, I mean, General Order 1, or isn't that what it was called? General?
Well, yes, yeah, that's probably what they're
called.
General Order 1. General
Turned
Order,
into what we call the Prime Directive.
Right, because, you know, number one is the Prime. It's the Prime.
And on Enterprise, there's that scene where, like, Archer's all like, maybe one day we'll have to come up with some sort of...
Yeah.
Prime Directive.
Yeah.
Some sort of, where he says, like, some sort of directive. Anyway.
But Pike, he turned off the beacon. And that's
beacon off.
If you're turning off their beacon, I mean, it's one thing to wander around their neighborhood being like, I'm from the north. I'm from your planet. And I act like you.
I love on Star Trek, whenever people get in disguise and go amongst the people, they're always like, they're always like, oh, we're from the next continent over.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
We're visiting travelers.
Right. Visiting travelers. It's like, oh, visiting travelers.
This has been in my family for generations. So, it's a navigation tool.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that line was kind of weird. But I mean, it was, I get, obviously he was trying to hide it, but it was just, yeah, it's been my family for generations. It's old, what's that thing they used on the ocean that the abacus is what you count with?
An astrolabe.
Astrolabe. Yeah, this is my astrolabe. With my astroglide, covered in astroglide. but turning off someone's beacon, that's not cool. You don't go over to someone's house and turn off their beacon. So that was the only time where Pike was a little bit, you know.
Here's the thing.
Not cool.
They don't debate it.
And the thing is I don't
think it's a Prime Directive.
I don't even remember him turning off the beacon, but that's what I have written in my notes, so it must have happened.
What's the name of the fellow they meet? I forgot to write
Jacob.
Down. Jacob. All right. So Jacob turns off the beacon at the end of the episode.
Well, yes, at the end. But this is halfway through when Jacob discovers them.
I don't remember exactly what the deal. But I think from Pike's perspective, if the beacon is what brought them, then you could argue.
Yeah, that's what it is. Is the beacon was brought them, and he didn't want to or something.
As much as I like this episode, there were parts that aggravated me because they were so close to being. And I got to clarify here, just in case if you're a new podcast listener, I'm a huge fan of the serial format. I think most of us are. We like the Star Trek is serialized. We also like the episodic Star Trek. And this was cool because it kind of bridged that gap a little. And that was exciting to see. Most of the rest of the season does not do that. So this, if you're watching this season and you get to this episode and you think it's going to kind of be like this, it's not. Unfortunately, but there's a lot of really great stuff in here, but then there's some editing decisions, and Jonathan Frakes talks about this, that drive me up the wall. And one of them is during that fire scene where they're all learning about, you know, they're asking these questions about, you know, they're
from the All Mother.
From the All Mother.
Oh, yeah.
That was like straight out of Deep Space Nine or something. Except when they were doing the transition, the fading in and out transitions, they were just like boom, 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 like super fast. And didn't get like, if they had done this on Deep Space Nine, they would have like paused on each person and then, it wasn't this like music video style, like just transitioning back and forth across all these different characters. That kind of thing drove me nuts because it was so close to being awesome. And Frakes talks about how in an interview maybe a couple of years back, he mentioned that Discovery, they want him to have, or at least at the time, were all about movement and keeping the camera moving and swooshing back and forth and doing all that other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we can tell that.
They pulled back on that in the third season, right? Which was good because you can have dynamic camera movement without making everyone sick.
They do that like throughout the first couple seasons. There's just a whole lot of
season one and season two has a couple egregious ones where it's really, you're just like, Jesus, I don't even know what's going on here. And it's unfortunate when it does impact the story. It impacts like being able to pay attention to it sometimes because you're just getting annoyed.
So they found this planet. There was Tilly. They were looking for this. So they get this beacon thing, the signal, right? They go to the signal, they follow the signal, and then they get to the place, and they say, "Oh, the signal is like 51,450 light years away." Or no, it's 150. Yes, 51,450.
It's in the beta quadrant.
It's in beta quadrant, 51,450 light years away. It would take them 150 years at top speed. And so they're trying to think of ways to what were they doing in there? So there was a part where Tilly shut off all the windows on her console when Burnham came up, and Tilly was like, "Oh, let me close these out for you." And then Tilly gave her idea of creating gravimetric distortion to act as sonar.
Wait, are you talking about her friend, her hallucinatory friend?
No, this is her on the bridge before.
Oh yeah, right before that.
Yeah,
right.
I can't remember why they were doing that.
They were doing that to triangulate.
Triangulate the position?
So they were scanning it from one position, warping real quick to another position and scanning it, and then that way they had 3 points. So they could triangulate the exact position that way.
Of exact position of what, though?
Of the signal.
The signal. Okay, I was trying to remember what it was exactly. But so she wants to create a gravimetric distortion, act as sonar, but Burnham like immediately shuts her down. She's like, "It's too far away." But then she said, "If we were closer, we might be able to detect gravitational redshift to calculate the position." So they warped to do so, like you said. Burnham basically said, "Tilly, your plan sucks because we're too far away, and because of that, it won't work." And then she says, "Let's get closer so we can do my plan." So no, you see how that's contradictory? Because Tilly was they could have warped and done Tilly's plan just fine.
I disagree on this.
Her reasoning was flawed. Go ahead.
I'm just saying that what they ended up doing was warping just a portion of a light year over, just enough to have enough parallax, you know, to enough distance between the points to do the calculation.
They would have had to go farther if they were going to do Tilly's plan.
My interpretation of what Burnham was saying is that they would have to be like really close, and because they didn't know exactly where it was, they knew the general direction, but they didn't know how far it was, and they wouldn't be able to get close enough for that.
Well, just like she was being a little too stodgy and sciencey with those people, religious people on Earth, she was not properly communicating in this situation.
And that's what happened. This is what she learns throughout season two.
She should have properly told Tilly, it's like, "Hey, Tilly, to me, as a viewer, you can make the assumption that it was too far away, like you said, and that's very reasonable." She should have fucking said that. She should have just made that clear. Be like, "No, Tilly, we have to go even farther, you know."
There's a number of interpretations, but all of them...
It doesn't really matter.
All of them
know.
Center on the idea that, yes, Burnham at this stage is still in the process of growing past this... I don't know exactly how you'd describe it. It's a headstrongness.
She's too Vulcan.
But I just want to, you know, because headstrong is not a bad thing.
I think it was a script problem.
It could be. I mean, it could be in this case. I mean, it may be. You can write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com and set us straight.
it's such like an asinine sort of thing to nitpick.
This is the whole, why would you be listening to this podcast? For any other reason.
That's right.
It's like, I'm watching a television program that I really want to analyze deeply.
You know, when she talked to Captain, and she was like, "Captain, when we were on that asteroid," and then she thinks of all this stuff happens, like 10 minutes of stuff happens in her brain, but really in real life, and then she pulls the, "I never properly thanked you," when she wanted to say, "I saw the angel." Yeah. But she pulled that TV movie trope of being like, "I'm going to tell you the truth. I need to tell you something."
She had a burning piece of spaceship in her leg.
You know, like,
but then they don't say "I love you," or they don't say I saw the demon creature.
Yeah, that's right. They don't say "I love you." They say
the beautiful demon creature.
Sure, looks like rain outside or something. You know, that's a TV trope.
Yeah,
it's a trope.
I mean,
I never properly thanked you. It's like, come on, just, you know, don't use that. Nobody talks like that. I never talk up and go to someone and say like, "Hey, Mom, and telling her, like, I killed 50 people, and then I end up saying, the salad was really good tonight. I was going to tell you I killed 50 people, but instead I couldn't bring myself to do it, so I'm going to compliment the salad." She's like, "Oh, well, that's nice, dear." Like, it wasn't awkward nice what touch. The fuck I just did.
In real life, do you often talk about quadrature decay or warp coils or what are the rectilinear rods? Quadrature decay, you know, the wheat, the four-lobed wheat.
Quintatridicale. That's from
too.
TAS, yeah.
Yeah, from the Trouble with Tribbles episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Quadro-triticale. Anyway.
I was on a mission from God. Yes. That's why I missed those.
Ivan Berkoff. It was invented by Ivan Berkoff.
Yeah, Ivan Berkoff. all right. So we've discussed this whole sort of religion angle. They don't push it too far. And I think that is one thing that we do notice sometimes in Discovery is whereas something might be the core story for another series, another Trek series, in this case, it's a little bit more for character flavor. You learn a little bit about Pike. You get to see an example of Pike being able to interact with people in a sincere and personable way.
He is personable.
Very
charming and romantic.
It plays a little with this guy, you know, this one guy who's all science-minded, and apparently his whole family has been. It's like a tradition in their family to be all like, science is real, and there's spaceships and shit out there. Mm-hmm. But he sounds like a lunatic to everybody because, you know, he does sound like a lunatic. He's like, you fly amongst the stars and stuff.
Pike even kind of chuckles. Is like, what we do. It's kind of a weird way to put it. But.
Totally do that. Pike was like, uh-huh, all right.
He's like that guy, what's that guy's name that this famous and was found naked in his room playing bongos and eating mushrooms, the guy that people want to run for president along with Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
Quadra Shitakaley?
No, he played Dirt or whatever. What was that movie? It was called Dirt? Dirt, where he was that guy on the island? It was called Dirty. You know that guy? He's super famous. He was super famous for being a pedophile in Dazed and Confused.
Oh, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. What was that movie? He was in that movie Dirt.
I don't know what it says to me. I got it from Dazed and Confused reference.
But that's what you were sounding like. Pike was sounding like Matthew McConaughey. When Pike gave him the battery.
Yeah.
And then
mega battery.
No, actually, no. At the end, first the guy, it was awesome. He like asked, you know, if he could have the camera, and the guy just like shrugged. He's like, yeah, of course.
Let me look for it. Oh, it's right over there.
Yeah, and he hands it to Pike. And what if Pike was like handing over the battery and then was like, haha, sucker, and then it beamed away and just didn't give it to him.
He was like, yoink.
And that'd be fucked up, right?
And when Pike gave him that power,
that would be a good way to end it, because it would be all totally like, what the fuck?
He was all like, yeah, it would be hilarious.
the whole episode would have been building up to that one joke, because Pike was being so.
And they could play some funny Benny Hill music at the end.
Yeah.
Yakety Sax.
Yeah, that one.
When Pike hands him the power cell, he's basically, you know, he's like, here's a power cell. And he's like, it'll last a long time. That's going to be a good power cell.
That's our best one.
We're going to dig that power cell.
That lady in Key West that sold us those stone pipes, and she's like, it'll last a long time.
Yeah. A long time. You're going to love this.
Stone pipes.
So he gives the power cell to the guy. I mean, we haven't talked a lot about Jacob. He's a really great character.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I like the actor.
The actor is great. The earnestness, the sort of stubbornness.
And you can also see how like he would kind of appear to be like a kook in his neighborhood. It is in that planet, but he's totally on point.
But what's interesting is that they don't. Again, this is, I think it's a bit of a drop ball in that they don't interrogate one of the best things they set up in this episode, which is the sort of the duality of faith, in the sense that Jacob essentially has faith in these old stories, faith in this idea of Earth and the spaceships.
Faith of the heart.
He has fucking faith of the heart.
Yeah.
And I'm always sensitive to when you're talking about like science. Science is not faith, but we're not talking about somebody living in the context of today, right? You know, anybody who compares science to faith will have a nice, good debate and argument about that. But in this context, he is living on primitive is not the right word. I don't like that word, but you know, Luddite, I guess. You know, it's sort of a Luddite thing. They don't have a lot of they don't have electricity. And they have this existing.
Ooh, they probably don't have running water
yet. Yeah. Well, they have this existing combo religion that they created, which is another thing I'd like to talk about.
It even has Wicca and Shinto.
But it's that's the prevailing dominant philosophy.
They still listed Christianity first. In the future, they're going to be like, it's kind of like dated that they listed Christianity first.
In the future,
that's what they did. That's what they did. White people did in America
and
back then.
And it's mostly white people. It's a lot of white people. So they could have done some interesting things to play up the fact that the All Mother's faith is almost less faith reliant than Jacob's in a sense, because he's also having to go against the prevailing philosophy of his whole planet, basically. That's the impression we get anyway, right? So that's an interesting story that's hinted at, but they don't really pick it up and run with it. This is a pretty short episode too, as far as Discovery episodes go. I think it was 43 minutes, something like that.
40, yeah, about something.
But
like that.
With credits and everything.
Right? Another old school feature.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of a late '90s era length. So that's an interesting thing. The other thing was that whole combo religion. I was on the one hand, when I heard about that, I thought, is that actually sensitive to say that people got there and then they just decided, all right, we'll just squish all the religions together and cut and paste them out. On the other hand, I realized that from the context of a group of people finding themselves stranded on a beautiful and productive planet and forced to fend for themselves, if they chose, instead of fighting with each other, instead of developing, you know, clans or whatever, if they truly opted to say, you know what, let's just go ahead and see what we share, and we'll focus on that, and that'll be the basis of our whatever moving forward.
You can kind of do that more realistically when you have only a couple hundred people versus thousands,
which is
and
how
thousands.
It started, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean, is like to squish the religions together when there's a manageable amount of people. You know, it's just when you start getting into like the thousands and hundreds of thousands of people that, you know, you got people forming their own little sort of groups and tribes and things like that.
They might not necessarily have been, everyone was those religions may not have all been represented in the population. It seemed like there was some line about they didn't know which god to thank. So they decided to create, you know, they decided to thank them all. Like it was something incredibly miraculous that happened to them.
They
were just like,
angel.
Well, what the fuck? And an angel came. And so they were like, well, what religion does that angel belong to? We don't know.
Yeah, it could be
a jinn. We're just going to take them all and combine them and throw Wicca in there.
So was it Burnham didn't know what a church was, so she's not at all in the know. And I like how OO says, like, my family are non-believers. It just seems like a weird thing to like
her
label.
Her family were like Luddites too.
Yeah, they were part of a Luddite collective. It's kind of weird to like label yourself and your family, we're non-believers. That's what you. That's what believers tell.
Yes,
people
exactly.
Who
that,
aren't into their
label
religion.
That's put on you.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to, well, you know, I guess you could say in this context, OO was.
Yeah, it's fine.
Differentiating yourself. Or just
it's fine.
Whatever.
It's a character.
It's just. It's fine.
Awasakun, she's wonderful, and I really liked this introduction of the idea of a Luddite community in the 23rd century.
Yeah, like on Earth. They say she was on Earth.
Yeah, the implication was that she grew up in a Luddite community on Earth. And again, they did not need to expand on
just
it here.
Just a few blocks away from Starfleet Academy.
But I hope I would really like them to expand on that in the future. Maybe I don't know exactly how, given the current context of things, but this is they introduce this idea in this episode. They take advantage of some of that knowledge as a result, right? You know, she's able to help a little bit because, you know, she's comfortable with this kind of whatever. But I would have liked to learn more about what exactly does it mean to be a Luddite in the 23rd century, because
they never mention it again.
Yeah, they don't really mention it. And the thing is, the reason why I ask is that one issue with the sort of Luddite philosophies in general is it's not that they do not use technology. It's that they select a particular point in time, a particular range of technology, and then reject what comes after that. And more power to you if that's your philosophy.
Like technology that they saw as oppressive, I think.
Like, not the Amish.
The Mennonites. They have slightly different ideas. But that I think the Amish is a good example.
Probably closer, because don't the Mennonites keep up just they're like 20 years behind or something? I'm making a very uninformed statement.
Mennonites don't have the strict beard growth policy like the Amish do.
But the idea being that they're still using tools, right? It's just they've chosen for a variety of justifications. They've chosen which set of tools and technology they will use, and that has evolved somewhat over the years. So the Amish themselves also evolve, but evolve in terms of, you know, what, you know, their criteria for what counts as appropriate technology. And I'm really curious, is a 23rd century Luddite community like a contemporary today Amish community, or is it like the late 21st century technology?
They're all into like Nintendo games posters on the wall.
They got like
and...
iPads. Yeah. iPods.
Yeah.
They build
these
barns
MP3s
out of.
Are great.
They have some rollerblades.
Build barns out of iPads. No, they build barns barn out pads. Of. They build barns out of the boxes you get from Amazon.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You just like just fill them with concrete and just
well,
stack them up.
You want to know more about this Luddite community? I want to know more about Sam the Brave.
Yes.
Tell me more about him, Father.
For those who live the Samwise. Old way burn, for those who sin against us shall be cut down by our gods. When those who believe in our signs come to thee, say, peace be upon you. It's pretty exciting. So that's, I don't know why they bothered to read the scripture.
I guess to give us some
gives you that scripture
concept
feel.
That is being cut and pasted together a little bit, taking verses from Bible, Quran, and, you know.
Oh, it's like back to Tilly. Why did they even bother having Tilly close all those windows for Burnham and then say, give a plan that Burnham shot down? What was the whole point of that scene? Like, to have Tilly, like, why was she shutting down windows for Burnham?
Another chance for Burnham to stomp all over Tilly, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's just Tilly being, yeah, right. Exactly. It's just Tilly being, oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Michael. I'm going to close these windows for you. Gee whiz, golly. And, oh, I'm going to give this plan, okay? And then Burnham's like, no, Tilly, you suck. It just seems like they were tearing Tilly down maybe to make her plan seem more all the more ridiculous with the asteroid or something. I don't know. She was holding that. They were depending on that anti-grav stuff, like to hold those asteroids. She should have put it on a dolly or something. You know, how she captured that little bit in that anti-gravity.
An anti-grav dolly.
And so she should have put on a dolly because the way she was carrying it, if it gave out, it would have fallen on her.
In the previous episode, they used like this big like gravity emitter thing that they put in the cargo bay, and it's like this thing that's like in a crate, and it like all like opens up, like it's all collapsed, and they like everybody's like clear, and like this thing opens up, and they all suck in the asteroid.
That's and then later, cool.
That's a different episode, but it's pretty tight.
Later, they in this episode they poop out the asteroid.
Yeah,
you see that scene where they poop out the asteroid. I know it's childish, and I apologize.
Oh,
in advance.
You mean the Discovery poops out the
when they do the donut maneuver.
The donut maneuver.
The donut maneuver in a starship. When they do the donut maneuver, which was cool, the special effects and production are excellent. And in this case, too excellent, because this is the kind of thing that would have been difficult for them to portray on one of the earlier series, right? Maybe they could have done it on Enterprise, but on this episode, it looks like the Discovery shits out a dark matter log.
Well, now I'll be thinking about that every time I see it.
Go back and watch just that scene, and you'll see the Discovery. It makes it goes, does a little turn, and then it's all like... and the music's all swelling.
That reminds me of it's Tilly's idea to do like donuts, and she's telling Detmer to do donuts, and she's like, or you're like, you'll be doing donuts in a starship, and she's like, yeah, that's true. she's all like really like not into it. She's like, yeah, that's what I'll be doing.
That scene, that's the scene when she comes out of. Okay, so when she's in that doctor's office, that's like
it's called sick bay.
Sick bay. Shit, my bad.
When she's in the nurse's
when
office.
She's in the doc the sick bay.
They keep sending me to a different place. I had to go here for this test. Now I got to go over here to pick up the test.
At the end of the scene, like first of all, she makes a funny face. What was it? Her name is May.
Yeah, May.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she when May's like, if only there was something on this ship that could generate a massive gravitational field, and Tilly makes sort of like two fun faces. One is the scrunched up mouth thinky face, and then she makes the eyes go wide, oh, yes, Eureka face.
Yeah. And I love Tilly.
And she runs out the door to the left, and then there's a comedic moment where it like pauses, and then she runs past the door to the right. I'm wondering, was that an outtake?
All right.
That's got to be an outtake.
I have the whole backstory for this.
Because it's awesome.
I've been looking forward to talking to this. all night. And Dan's getting excited again. Calm down, folks in the audience. Everything's going to be fine.
Dan is okay.
This is a recording. He's here with us live now, but for you, it's a recording. He can't harm you. He can't come out your speakers and harm you. I assure you that we've tested it. We've tested it thoroughly. It's going to be fine. All right. So in this scene, first of all, part of what adds to the humor of this scene is right before she does that, right before Tilly runs out of sick bay, runs left, and then like comes running back across. Tilly says to May, she says, you're a genius. And then May is like, no, you're the genius.
Yeah.
And so she's like, you're a genius. And then she goes the wrong way out of sick bay. And then of course it's a fun comedic moment and it's well performed and well timed. Jonathan Frakes ad-libbed that. That was not in the script. Jonathan Frakes just did it, and the producers didn't even see it until they were watching the dailies. You know?
Wait, Jonathan Frakes did it?
Jonathan Frakes.
Just told her to do that.
Told her to do that. He came up with that idea, according to... It was on the Ready Room, I think. I think it was an interview, perhaps, with Frakes. So it was his idea to do that, and he just filmed it that way. I don't know if he filmed it the other way, too, but he was like, here, this is funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, I agree. It was really funny. And Mary Wiseman is just one of my favorites. Tilly is, you know, I love Tilly. I'm a pro Tilly, happy Tilly person.
You like pro Tilly. When May said that, no, you're the genius. Now this could all be moot if something happens down in later episodes that changes this all around. But when May says you're the genius, you think she's being all sweet and being like, no, Tilly, you're the genius. But she really is saying you're the genius because May is a fabrication of Tilly's.
As it turns out, May is not entirely a
right. So now, and I seem to figure like that's like not the case. So it's not really as
you find
clever.
Out her deal within the next couple episodes.
And that's what I was sort of thinking happened, which is why
you shouldn't
that
be thinking. You shouldn't be thinking. That's the problem.
Who told you to think?
It gets you in trouble, dude.
So yeah, I know. It's
I stopped thinking long ago.
Yeah, my life would probably
couldn't
be easier. The way when Tilly runs in there with her skirt and Saru's all like, he's like, Tilly, how many times must we have this conversation? The way he berates Tilly, it's almost in this like really loving way. Like she exasperates him, but he loves and trusts her. So he puts up with it. It's not like, it's definitely not like a captain subordinate relationship, even though, you know, it is, but it isn't. It's almost like she's his kid or something.
He cares for her. He respects her. And I think he identifies with her in a lot of ways. Yeah. He says as much both in this episode and in other episodes. He has the other great line where right after they do the jump and it's Pike's first jump. And then Saru's all like, you never forget your first time.
Oh yeah.
And Burnham flashes him a look like, ugh. It's like, do you know you just told a body joke to the sexy Captain Pike?
Yeah.
But you know, Captain Pike has that effect on people. So it doesn't surprise me. He has that effect on Saru.
Even on Kelpians.
Yeah.
They eat kelp.
Did you notice, you know, towards the end of the episode?
No.
Towards the end of the episode.
I bet he's lying. He noticed.
So, and again, we haven't really discussed it, but it's, I don't know. I don't think there's that much to discuss because it's more, it's just more action playing out, but it doesn't add that much to the theme of, you know, they, Jacob steals their stuff and then they track him down and they break out.
He throws a flashbang at them.
Yeah. And
I know that game. I know that from video games.
And then
what flashbangs are.
A little girl gets a hold of the phaser for some reason and sets it to overload. And
right.
And he all jumps on it like a grenade.
Is that
like
what happened? Did it explode? Was it on overload self-destruct mode?
I don't think it was on overload blow up mode. I think it was on overload zap. Like big zap. It's like wide beam zap. It's like you can use a phaser like a grenade if you want. I don't know.
Right.
Because if it fucking blew up, he would have been dead. Okay.
Patrick got really stressed.
I'm trying to retcon this into something that makes sense because if it blew up he would be fucking dead.
Yeah, but it just, but then they say a phaser later on he was like in a phaser went off.
I think it was like zappied with a phaser.
Maybe it was like a timed phaser like with a camera.
Yeah, like with one of them shitty little cameras.
Yeah, that they still make jokes about in modern television.
Yeah, there was a whole Bob's Burgers about that recently.
I was thinking about just that.
Yeah, it was a good one.
It was.
But now his ribcage feels like the xylophone. Telephone player in the
Klingon marching band. I wonder what the Klingon equivalent of a xylophone is. It's got involved bones.
Yeah, but it's cool that like at this point
Those
they're able to make jokes about like the Klingon marching band. It's just part of their
vernacular.
Now. Yeah.
You know, there's
part
probably
of their joke culture.
You know what? I'm thinking like there's probably not even a xylophone Klingon marching band. That was probably
it's called
just
like a mock tog. Do you play the mock tog? Yes, I play it with your bones.
It's like bones that you play with bones.
It's like, those are my bones.
Yeah, you can play my bones. If you all want to get the bones joke, just download the accounting VR. Is that what it is?
Something like that.
Justin Roiland's accounting VR accounting game. And if you get to the last level, you'll get to learn about playing them bones. So Pike says context can alter our perspective, which great line makes sense in the storyline. It's a good lesson for Burnham because it is a key lesson in science. I mean, when you're at higher levels of science, what they teach you is, yeah, you have this data, but you can look at this data in different ways. And so you've got to nail that shit down first before you make a conclusion. And this is a mistake that I think Burnham has made often, is she's got a lot of the information. It's not that the information's wrong, but she's missing some information that would change the way she would look at the information she already has, right? That's a classic error people make in the scientific endeavor. So having a scientific mind is no guarantee that you're gonna like get the right answer all the time, and Burnham is proof of that. But one reason why I mention it is this line, context can alter our perspective. I was thinking about that in versus context is for kings, which is what Lorca says, which is a different perspective on context. That's more about you make the context. You. If you're the king, then you are the one who's making the context that other people have to view things through.
A different context about context.
I know, it's right?
Two very different styles of captaining.
Back in the early 2000s, we would have called that meta.
Now meta is reserved for trading card games. It's like, what's the meta? What's the magic meta? what's the Hearthstone meta?
What's the meta, man?
They say the meta is the jabbering troglodyte. It's jabbering troglodyte is totally in the meta right now. So all these decks are built around defending against it.
Cringe. I haven't played Hearthstone. I'm a Magic the Gathering guy.
Well, I mean, there's a magic meta too.
There is a magic meta.
It's just more focused in Hearthstone. I haven't played Hearthstone in years just because it got to be like, okay, this is finally like
real. It gets to be much.
It's like after a while, yeah, it's like, okay, the more it just became really tedious. And then one day I just stopped and never like played it again.
Yeah. That never happened to me with Star Trek though.
No.
I keep watching it.
Keep watching it.
And over and over and over again. And then I do a podcast about it with my friends.
So May was 16 when she died.
Yeah, she was 16. Yeah.
Lunch was
going on 17, but didn't quite make it.
Lunch was like
Sound of Music.
Lunch was
it's a movie.
Lunch was like little earthquakes. Bounce, bounce, bounce.
That was cute.
Yeah. And Sound of Music was first it's a musical, but they made it into a movie.
I think it was a movie. Was it a music? Was it a movie that they then made into a musical?
Was it?
I think it was the other way around. I could be wrong
about
that.
That one, I'm not sure. Yeah.
I think that was the era where you were making it. Welcome to It's Got the Sound of Music.
I don't know. Now you got me questioning myself. I was so sure of myself.
I am 16.
Because those were the people that did was like Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah, Rodgers and Hammerstein.
So, I mean, yeah, they were definitely stage people, and then they could have done this as a movie first. Yeah.
And this is Star Trek adjacent because of, Christopher, what's his name? Christopher
Pike?
Pine? Plummer.
Christopher Plummer.
He played General Chang.
Yeah.
We need breathing room.
He recently deceased.
Earth, Hitler, 1938. That was a scene from Star Trek VI. You can get more of that in our episode on Star Trek VI. I don't remember the episode number, so you'll have to go look it up.
Wasn't there?
It's a little ways back.
We need something. Wasn't there a funny movie that said had a similar cadence?
Yeah, well, it's because Hitler said we need breathing room. Wir brauchen Lebensraum.
What was the scene in Young Frankenstein where Gene Wilder sticks himself with the knife?
Yes, that's when he's talking about, you know, that he, you know, He's not the same as his great grandfather.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was some. Never mind, it's not important. I was thinking about there was something with a similar cadence, but that signal. Did they decide they decided in that episode that signal was put there to maybe attract them to help save the planet? Now, how did the signal know to attract them within 60 minutes of when it was going to fall?
Because of time travel, bro. You can do whatever.
Oh, yeah, because of time travel.
November 5th, 1955.
Oh, but I mean...
November 5th, 1955.
Okay, but those signals were up way for a long time before they actually went there.
Like 300 years.
They got Starlink.
So
they got the Starlink action.
Yeah, so
Elon Musk. That's why Tilly went to Musk High School.
That's right.
So why? If you put the signal up 300 years before this planet gets destroyed, how are you going to expect that signal is going to attract them?
Because they didn't. The signals all appeared at the same time.
Right. That's what I said.
So they weren't up for 300 years.
The red signal.
You said 300. You guys said 300.
No, the people had been there for 300 years.
No, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about the signal that attracted...
You're talking about Jacob's signal.
I was talking about the signal.
The distress call.
That's different.
No,
the distress call.
Wasn't the signal what attracted them? The signal was not...
What's the frequency?
You're talking about the red dots. The red flashes.
What attracted them to the planet. They decided...
Captain Pike.
No, what they decided at one point, they were like, maybe the signal is here. The signal they saw
from... Yeah, that's what they... That's where they 50, were putting
52,000 light years 100, away.
152,000.
Or 51,450. 50. It was 150.
50. 50
it was 150. It was 150 years of top speed. Look, that's the reason.
Yeah, you're right. You're,
not even our grandchildren will get there.
Yeah, they're like when the Q knocked the TNG Enterprise all far away, and they were like, I could knock you so far. Or wasn't Q who did that? It was some planet did that.
No,
Q
did that.
It was Q. It would be you have grandchildren.
Or that alien that was messing with their propulsion systems in that episode.
The Traveler.
Yeah, the fucking Traveler. So, no, okay. Look, Discovery found that place, and they were like, huh. You know, because it's like, what are the chances we find this signal, and oh, hey, by the way, there's within 60 minutes... This radioactive debris is going to land on the planet. What are the odds? And so they're postulating, well, maybe this signal was put there to attract us in order to save the planet. When was that signal put there? Because if it was put there...
Right before this episode. Like, the season two starts with these signals all appearing, and within the span of, you know, it's months or days... Or weeks.
See, I know it's within the episode, but right, exactly. Yeah. If it's months.
The signals appear and disappear, and then they start picking them up.
So like if that signal was put there to attract Discovery to save the planet.
Because the person who put the signal there knows that Discovery has a spore drive.
Yeah, but if they put it months in advance, how are they going to know that Discovery
They didn't
get
put
there
it months in
time?
Advance. They remember.
You just said they put it months in advance.
Look, forget about the months. Who the hell am I? To say anything factual.
My whole point is just
who the hell am I?
I don't think this signal is an effective way to keep them from to help have them save the planet because like they would have to see it right away and then go to the signal.
But they got there.
Yeah.
And what are the odds that they got there? I'm saying that seems unlikely that they would get there within 60 minutes of it happening.
You got to watch it till the end, man.
you put me in a very difficult position.
Okay, fine. Is this the spoiler alert thing?
No, it's not even about the spoilers. The difficult position for me is that as I stated earlier, this whole plot is problematic for precisely the reasons you're talking about.
However, that's why I was pointing it out.
But at the same time, the reason it's a difficult position is you stating that has immediately turned on my Star Trek brain to be like, well, here is the specific reasons why it works. Because there is some framework in which this makes sense that we're either missing information or whatever. So it's not that it doesn't make sense in the end. It's that it's convoluted. And as the story unfolds,
it's still kind of weird at the end.
It's mystery style. Yeah. And then the solution to the mystery is like,
it's even weirder. Yeah.
It's like, okay, like
whatever.
I've seen this season a few times and normally I remember the shit out of these things, but for some reason it escapes me. And the only explanation I have is the complexity and
the brilliance
No. See, that's the thing is, it's not if the audience does not understand
the luminescence,
that's a problem, right? There are shows that go too far with it. Like I like the first season of Westworld. I thought this is really clever. Ooh, sneaky. Ooh, blah blah blah. And then the second season of Westworld, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it turns out you have to like watch each episode five times and go to the internet to determine what's happening.
Or like The Witcher.
And all I want to know is
that one I like though.
That all I want to know is how did they arrive 60 minutes within like just 60 minutes within it crashing? Because an event like that, presumably space events take billions of years for them to develop.
You're just gonna have to have faith of the heart in the in the writers and in the science of Star Trek.
But yes, so
take it.
Don't worry about the odds. Don't think about it.
We're telling you about this whole thinking. All this stress you're feeling is because you're thinking.
I'm
thinking
get from there.
I gotta embrace all the religions and get on that planet and have faith and of the heart and of Shinto or whatever
and Wicca.
Yeah, Shinto, Wicca, Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism,
and then
Islam.
I can have
Christianity, which was listed first,
and I can have Jacob's science faith, which is not real faith or not real science, but they sound like each other.
Yeah, the only problem I had with this episode, from that perspective, I liked the story they were telling, but I'm also watching it. And I'm like, you know what? It would not be unreasonable for these people to have like a planet where like Jacob could say the shit. Like it's not like they're treating him badly or anything, but they're kind of like giving him shit about it a lot. And it's like, this would be an even cooler planet if it was like, yeah, no, we're cool with Jacob. He's a good guy. Yeah, he's got some different ideas, but more power to him. Who knows? Maybe it'll turn out like he's right. There's spaceships. And guess what? Even if there are spaceships, doesn't mean I didn't see a fucking angel, like, or my great grandmother's didn't see a fucking angel, you know? So anyway, it's a minor quibble because if it was like that, there would not be much story. it would just be like a documentary about a very pleasant planet that was briefly invaded by some agitating future people. Well, contemporary. Ugh, God, Jesus, it's so fucking confusing. You know what I mean. So Pike says to Jacob, I hope we meet again, Jacob.
And Pike Jacob says to Jacob, he says, sorry. Go ahead, sorry.
And Jacob says, I know we will. And it was an interesting line in there because they didn't have to say that.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, it would be kind of cool. I know they hadn't fully conceived of this necessarily at the time, but it would be neat if they went back there on Strange New Worlds or something.
I think we're going to have to hold them to that.
I think so.
Yeah,
too.
I was thinking that too about how it was weird and unnecessary to throw that in there unless they plan to follow through with it.
And Strange New Worlds, by all accounts, is going to be much more episodic. It's basically going to be an episodic show, but with some overarching character beats and growth and stories and stuff. But for the most part, the adventures are going to go planet adventure, planet adventure.
The Cage has already happened. The Cage episode is already happened.
It'll be post Cage.
If you watch more of the second season, they get into a little bit of that.
Oh yeah, so that's a good episode. The one you're talking about.
That's pretty cool.
So that they'll have that opportunity to maybe go back to this planet and maybe interrogate some of those ideas they introduced here in terms of the science versus religion and Ludditism and this, that, and the other thing. And they gave them the power cell. So maybe, you know, they'll use that to, Jacob will be able to fabricate more power cells maybe and start a little, maybe there'll be a war or something because now there's the Luddites and the technocrats.
Techno monsters.
Techno humans doing the techno.
Jacob's never
going to
meet Michael Burnham again.
Yeah, that's, he'll never meet him again.
No spoilers. I already talked about that.
Astromycology taught Stamets that nothing is truly gone. He said fungi. He didn't say fungi. Well, he said fungi are the universe's recyclers. This is how termination begets creation. It's why life is eternal. It's kind of neat, but it's also kind of like weird and kind of bullshitty.
It's a little pop philosophy.
Yeah, exactly. Style. Right, right.
This was one issue in the series, and again, this is because of decisions made during the first season that I think maybe they wanted to go back on. One of them being the death of Culber, which was, I think, problematic in two ways. First of all, Culber is a great character. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, wonderful actor.
Were they planning to keep him killed originally?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know enough about what happened in the background, but you get the impression that they went, even if they said they planned this, it's almost hard to believe that they were like, let's have this convoluted way because, spoiler alert, which it's an old series season by now, Culber comes back, right? So Culber comes back and is related to the mushrooms. You can already guess what's going to happen because he's already talking about having seen him and stuff, you know? So I don't know how much they gain from the story of Culber's dead, and now he's brought back to life, and then they play around with that a little bit.
Yeah, he occasionally, every once in a while, talks about how, oh yeah, I was dead once, you know, and like every once in a while, I throw it in an episode, and it's just kind of like, okay, is this your? I guess they use it as a way of him relating to characters, and but it's not, it's unnecessary.
They do some good character stuff later in the second season with Culber, in terms of he feels like a different person, and that it affects the relationship with Stamets, and so there's interesting stuff that results from it, but from a thematic or philosophical sense, it's just like, I don't know what this says necessarily. It seems more like they needed to bring this character back, and again, the serialized storytelling makes them more liable to be like, let's spend a number of episodes bringing him back through this convoluted thing. Again, lots of good stuff in the process of getting there, but once it's done, it's kind of like, all right, what about like on TNG or something, where it'd be like, oh, just somebody comes from a different dimension, or their clone sister is like there or something, you know, whatever, you know, some one of those types of things.
The Traveler.
The Traveler.
Wesley Crusher.
All right. Odds and ends.
So this happened. These people were during the time of World War III. Mm. World War III left 600 million dead. That's a lot more than the burn killed. The burn killed millions.
Yeah.
And then World War III
was shit. It was some shitty shit.
Yeah, but it's like, you'd think the burn would kill more than the burn, which involved like the galaxy.
But it was only really like, it was people who were on ships.
Yeah,
right?
I guess you're right.
Thing.
I guess you're right. I guess you're right.
This is some season three discovery stuff.
Yeah.
So General Order One,
you can listen to those podcasts where we talk all about that, James.
Would you say, do we know enough about General Order One to know whether it's basically, if there's any difference between it and the Prime Directive?
I don't think
or
so.
Or is it, it's just, yeah, it's just
I think it's an evolution in term.
It definitely seems like a different way to call it.
Yeah.
Prime
Directive or General Order Number
General
One.
General Order.
It's an order or it's in a directive.
Yeah.
Maybe they got more polite later on.
Directive.
There was some people at Starfleet got a focus group together, and they're like, you know, people don't like this.
Let's call it the first suggestion.
They don't like orders. What's a better word for order?
Directive?
The fundamental
Starfleet's marketing arm. Starfleet has a marketing core, so it's a pretty fine gig to land in Starfleet. You get to make the pamphlets, Starfleet recruitment pamphlets. Have you ever wanted to fly among the stars?
You know, when they mentioned Arthur C. Clarke, that was his quote, is any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, which makes sense because, you know, we have the ability to basically use Wi-Fi to if we wanted to, we could make it look like through Wi-Fi we could do magic, like moving items around the room.
Go back in time with a lighter.
Yeah, right.
Not that far back in time, by the way. Like 150, 200 years, you're probably still looking pretty cool with that.
So
I've told you this before, but I used to always have a dream when I was a kid of taking like whatever the current arcade, I mean the current video game console, like Super Nintendo, Nintendo 64. I used to sit there at night and dream about, I want to go back in time, and I want to take this back in time to the 1950s, and I want to show kids in the 1950s, you know, Super Mario World or Zelda.
They probably didn't have the coaxial connector.
You could rig that shit
or that screw that you
fucking splice some fucking wires. I'll get it to work. Or I thought about
screw,
that too. I was like, I'll bring a TV.
Hook.
I was like, I'll bring a TV bring and I'll TV. Bring some like a plug adapters. I'll make sure it's not a three-prong plug. It'll be a two-prong plug.
I wonder
because they used to be savages back in the 50s.
I wonder if the electrical output has changed, you know, so it's...
I think it was still 110.
So miles. It's kind of interesting that they decided through scientists and theologians in Star Trek, according to Pike, said they reinterpreted that. So reinterpreted something that basically says technology looks magical to say any sufficiently advanced extraterrestrial intelligence is indistinguishable from God. I see the relation, but I don't see why they would reinterpret it to say that, because that has a kind of a different meaning, even though it's they're cousins of each other.
I think it's in the, you know, getting back to context is for kings, and context changes perspective. I think the context is of encountering extraterrestrial.
Yeah,
so it becomes meaningful. Yeah. A taking that particular concept and
they
then translating
derived
it
to make it apply to them.
Yeah, and it and it makes sense in a of course because look at Q, right?
No,
yeah, you fucking look at him.
No,
just look at him.
I'll look at John DeLancey
in season two of Picard. You will. God damn it.
I hope so.
He is.
If it ever comes out.
It's coming out. They're filming
your
it right
butt.
Now.
It's coming out your butt.
So
next year.
So the Q, by a lot of measures, is a god.
Yeah.
But Picard certainly wouldn't call him that.
Yeah, it's hilarious. That's the whole humor of it. If does Picard, Harvey Picard, just Q being a god seeming so mischievous and Picard being so exasperated and angry with God. And just, but not in like a, because whenever people get mad at God, they're like, you destroyed my life, God, fuck you. You took my family. Oh my God, why, God? And Picard's like, Q, get the fuck out of here. You know, basically.
Well, and there's that great line in Tapestry when, you know, Picard wakes up in that white heavenly space and Q walks up and says, Picard's like, what's going on here? Q, what's the meaning of this? He's like, you're dead, Picard, and I'm God. And even then, Picard's like, nah. Picard straight up says, I refuse to believe that you're God.
We should talk about that episode.
We should. That is a good episode. We'll talk about that sometime soon because, you know, to get ready for more Picard action.
Baby God action.
All right, odds and ends. 9 minute and 49 second long teaser. It's not the longest teaser, but it's one of the longer.
You mean the cold open?
Yeah, the cold open teaser, whatever the fuck you want to call it. Discovery has a couple long. I think they Discovery has one that's like 15 minutes.
They like those long ones.
They like those long ones.
And you're like watching the show, and you're like, all right, I'm into the show, and then all of a sudden, there's like a Captain Pike or somebody like drops the mic.
Yeah,
it's all like boom, and then it goes to the theme song.
It's like, why even bother at that point?
Yeah,
like, we already know what the hell we're watching.
Yeah. Well, it says, speaking of time markers, at 17 minutes and 40 seconds, when their planet friend dude, Jacob, says, is this your first time in New Eden? It's this side shot of him, and there's like kind of light behind him, so it almost looks like a silhouette, but it's not, but you can see his lips moving. And his lips move to, is this your first time in New Eden? But then they keep moving a little bit afterwards. Yeah. They move for another second after. It looks like he closes his mouth and says one more thing.
Because on the day he said, is this your first time in New Eden, motherfucker?
Oh, yeah, that was what
Why
it was.
Why aren't you in the fields?
Yeah. Mother father?
Mother lover?
Mother lover?
Yeah. So do you think all the Luddites, like if they lived in, this is assuming they lived in the United States, what we call the United States right now, do you think they all just went to Montana or something? Or Wyoming?
I don't call that the United States.
What do you mean, they?
The Luddites, the Luddite community.
You mean, the one where Osh Sikken grew up in?
Yeah.
Good question. That's another question I have. Where was it?
She does not exactly have a Montana accent.
No, May didn't have a San Francisco accent.
That's true.
Either, so and I think accents work differently in the future. Captain Picard is French and he has a British accent.
Shit.
And in Starship Troopers, that dude's family was from Brazil and they were just some white people.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation.
Or Argentina, I believe. Same difference.
Odds and ends.
I like Dr. Pollard doesn't have a very big role in the show, but I kind of like her whenever she's in because like,
she's like a real fucking doctor.
Yeah, when Saru's just like basically mad at Tilly saying you could have killed yourself and everyone, and he's like, Dr. Pollard, corroborate. And she's just like, he's correct, almost dead, you, but you're gonna be okay.
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't matter. So she's pretty tight. I like her.
She's super tight. I really liked the creepy, disjointed synth future music, and we commented that on that in Discovery Season 3, where I think they use it more. But in Season 2, they start putting that in there, and it's sort of this underbeat. It's like it's disturbing and creepy. Exactly.
Saru refers to his species as race. He refers to the Kelpians as a race.
Mm-hmm.
But in Enterprise, I think like was it T'Pol who's all about saying species? Or I don't remember what Star Trek show they were saying. It's probably most of them they say. I don't know. It's probably like inertial dampers and dampeners. They probably go back and forth on different
sensors.
Ones.
And sensors. Enterprise. Yeah.
Kirk doesn't say that.
Errors.
Yeah, Enterprise was, you know, they were just getting out there. They were a little bit. Mm.
Yeah.
Oh.
They're fumbling around.
Yeah. So you think they settled on race?
I don't know. It's
That's a racial question.
Yeah. Send us feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Just set us straight about race.
Oh, yeah. Set us straight.
About race.
Rise in Mai Tais. Send us Rise in Mai Tais.
Ryzen My Time.
That's the sex planet, Kanar, right? Or that's Ryza.
Ryza. Oh, yeah. No, Ryzen. Right. Ryzen. Ryzen. Yes.
Ryzen. No, that's a different one. It doesn't have the edit.
Hey, you know what's Ryzen on Ryza? I'll tell you what's something's Ryzen. Ryzen in my pants.
Ryzen in your pants.
Not if you have too many Mai Tais.
Yeah, too many cooks.
They said something about like the radioactive debris, that scene where they were trying to like get it out. Oh yeah, that one dude was giving the suggestions, like, because they were taking suggestions to how to handle this debris before they used gravity to pull out. One dude was like, just blast it with phasers. And they were like saying, that'll just give it a greater concentration. I don't understand how you blast something with a laser and it's going to give it a greater concentration.
Yeah, because of energy, maybe. It's made up. It's some made up bullshit.
It's made up bullshit.
argue that the made up bullshit is that the energy imparted from the phasers, energy can't, it has to go somewhere. Something has to happen to it. And in this case, it's kind of like all those movies where when the, you know, like in The Fifth Element, when you like shoot it with missiles, the dark planet creature that's controlling Zorg, it just gets bigger.
So you're talking about like magic, like space monsters.
If you apply violence to something, you just make it stronger.
I just thought like they meant the opposite, where it would actually lessen the concentration, so it would just spread the rocks all over the planet, messing it up more.
That is your standard problem with asteroids.
It's usually
you blow up one asteroid and you've just made more bullets.
That's the
it's like worms.
Like worms?
Like worms.
Like worms? Wait, do you blow up worms?
You cut up worms, you just get more worms.
So, I mean, it's a more likely explanation than like a universe space monster that gets bigger with energy shot at it, but
marginally.
Worms. When do you blow up your worms, Jesse?
Well, you don't blow them up. You just step on them.
And to make them a greater concentration.
Or if you cut a worm in half, you just have two worms.
Like, yeah, that's weird.
So bilateral symmetry.
I thought you were saying you make a greater concentration of worms by stepping on them, and it concentrates them.
No, that's a rat king.
Yeah, it's a rat king.
I know what a rat king is, but that's not what I was talking about.
When they get their tails
get all, I know, but that's not what I was talking about.
Crusted with feces.
I wasn't talking about
set
that.
Set us straight, but I believe if you cut a jellyfish in half, it does the same thing.
Jellyfish is tasty.
Wait, I knew a rat king was tied up tails. Is it? I mean, it makes sense, but I never thought about it. Is it proven that there's feces involved?
I'm pretty sure that what causes a rat king is feces and other material and matted fur and stuff that
it's
clumps together
feces.
And turns into sort of a glue that glues together their tails. And so when you encounter a rat king, it's just a writhing monster of trapped, starving rats that are doing their best to come and get you. It is also a prominent character on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, at least on the TV show. I don't think the Rat King was in the comics.
Yeah, I'm guessing the Rat King was a joke on that term, Rat King.
I would presume so.
I didn't get that at the time. But
Rat Now.
Rat Now. Rat Now. That's how you say it. Rat Now.
Rat Now.
Let's go Rat Now.
Odds and ends. Any more odds and ends on this fine episode of Star Trek Discovery?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I'm not hearing any more odds and ends.
It would have sucked if that soldier's video camera just had some worthless shit on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was all pixelated.
Well, it's interesting that, I mean, those people couldn't fix it to make it work. But if they did, they would have been like, well, this is obvious proof that everything we believed is true.
Yeah, yes. It looked like an angel.
Which is another interesting angle this episode could have explored.
Yeah. But they just gave it up. It's like, no, here, take it. It doesn't work. I don't need it. I'll take this fucking battery.
Yeah, I was thinking like the battery was a good trade, but at the same time he didn't think about that enough. Yeah, you know?
He could have been like, well, I'll let you watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
why,
right.
Yeah.
Why don't you make it work and I'll let you
or
watch it.
Or we watch it together. Maybe you can have it, but can I check it out too?
Right. No, Prime Directive can't come on our ship. No, Prime Directive.
Maybe it used
General
to work.
Order One.
Maybe it used to work, and that's one reason why they had some proof beyond the original 200 that some angel showed up and then it stopped working at some point. Again, we don't get enough details.
Yeah.
That was a good odd and end.
Oh, thanks.
I don't know whether it was an odd or an end.
It was a bit odd. It was at the end.
And it was at the end of this podcast,
yeah,
which we're rapidly approaching the end of the podcast.
I really got to pee.
It's coming soon.
Dan's got to pee. The audience, they've got other shit to do. They've got other podcasts to listen to. They might be listening to Mindscapes.
Apple podcast.
They might be giants.
They might be, well, that's music. They could also be listening to music. But if they're listening to us on a podcast, I'm guessing that the next thing in their playlist is going to be another podcast.
another one of our podcasts.
It probably could be. They could just be listening to It's Got Star Trek all day, mainlining It's Got Star Trek. This is the first episode they heard, and they thought these guys are great, not fully understanding that this is a particularly good episode. I'm sorry, Dan. Dan does actually have to be.
That's okay.
Dan's got that little boy being good in church, about to piss his pants. Look, he's like, I really don't want to piss my pants, because the minister will be all like, going. Oh, that Dan. All right, so that'll do it for us. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Social media at It's Got Star Trek, with, you know, the at symbol looks like a snail. At It's Got Star Trek on
looks like a snail. It does. Yeah,
Snail trail, and it's on at It's Got Star Trek on Twitter and Instagram. Trail. We're on Facebook. Lots of activity on Facebook, lots of activity on Twitter, and on YouTube, because the crazy people who like listening to podcasts on YouTube, and we occasionally have some bonus content.
It's audio only, but there's
fun.
There's a visual.
There's a picture.
Yeah, and it's fun.
But we put the highlights up there, and we put some bonus content up there, and you never know what could go up there next.
Could be Worms.
Could be all sorts of things. Other than that, that'll do it for us. This evening, and we will say goodnight. Dan will go pee. Jesse's probably just going to be chilling there. And Jesse and I will wait for Dan to finish peeing, and then we'll be all set. So we'll report back on what happened next week.
Hey, Dan.
So in the meantime, thank you very much, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Good night.
Night.
Come.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, and... don't make me laugh.
Fortunately for you, I was raised on Vulcan. We don't do funny.